And good morning, Dr. John McDougall, KSR Radio 1350. Great loss today with the death of Jerry Garcia. I think many of you know it's all public record, but I'm going to tell you right now, as the Grateful Dead followed the McDougall program, it's been written in many newspapers, they brought their own chefs along. Most of the Dead members did follow the program very strictly. I had a chance to meet with Jerry Garcia about 3 years ago. Again, public record that he was in having some heart failure at that time. And I was an influence on him, and I think in some small way I probably made a difference in his life over the last 3 years. But unfortunately, it wasn't a big enough difference, was it? I'm Dr. John McDougall. This is KSR Radio 1350. The subject for today is kids. That's right. And feeding kids a low-fat prescription. And it takes a bold doctor to step out and talk about eating healthy, but it takes even a bolder doctor to step out and talk about feeding our kids a healthy diet, a vegetarian diet, to say the least. And so I really look forward to the time that I have to spend with Dr. Charles Atwood, MD, who's a pediatrician in Louisiana, who's taken that step and written a book called Dr. Atwood's Low-Fat Prescription for Kids. Why do you think this is necessary, Dr. Atwood? I mean, after all, kids are tough. They can do almost anything, and they survive.
Well, John, it seems that they survive. However, we know that 1 out of 2 children are going to have heart disease as adults, and 1 out of 3 will have a food-related type of cancer. So this is old news, you know, but what's new is some of the new findings that we're just now reported. That is that children as early as age 12 have fatty deposits already in their coronary arteries.
Well, I thought it was as early as 8 months.
Well, it's actually much earlier. As you say, we begin to see it very early, like 8 months and 2 and 3 years. However, at age 12, say junior high school, we have about two-thirds of the children have these deposits.
Extensive artery disease.
Right. It's the beginnings of coronary artery disease.
But we do really see, I mean, as a pediatrician, it must really rip your heart out to see some of the suffering the kids go through. I remember as a family practitioner before I became an internist, I would see these kids come into my office with stories such as, you know, Johnny has a problem. He has blood in his stool. And I'd say, well, is there anything wrong with his bowel habits? Is he constipated? No. Well, tell me what his bowel movements are like. Well, they're, you know, hard and rocky, and it takes him a half an hour to pass them. And
yeah.
The mother doesn't think there's anything abnormal because she reads a whole issue of Reader's Digest, too. Well, she's in there.
Yeah.
And you must see that all the time.
Well, I do. John, what we see is that children are getting very little fiber, as you know, just like adults are not. And dairy products and meat are supplying no fiber whatsoever. And we learned a few weeks ago, I saw this in a report, that on a given day, 25 to 30% of children have eaten no vegetables or fruit at all, and we know they need 5 or more servings every day. I'm just afraid children are not getting. I know they're getting too much fat, and of course I'm afraid they're certainly not getting enough fiber, and that contributes to what the constipation problem is that you described.
Would it be fair, in my quick read of your book, and I looked through the recipes, that you don't recommend dairy or chicken or fish or beef for these children?
Well, I would have to say, if a parent asked me what is the gold standard diet for my child, a child over 2 years of age, and if they really want to know what I think is absolutely best, I feel a purely vegetarian diet is best. However, for prevention of coronary disease, for controlling cholesterol, for preventing cancer, I feel that children can consume, if the parents wish, some milk, some dairy products, some servings of meat maybe twice a week,
mm-hmm.
but small servings, and not cooked in oil, not fried in oil, and certainly the dairy products should be switched from whole milk to 1% or skim milk.
What do you think about the association of dairy protein consumption and childhood diabetes? Does that concern you?
At first, I was very skeptical, John, but now I'm beginning to take it really seriously. As a matter of fact, the American Academy of Pediatrics is beginning to take this seriously, too. And it seems to be related with the early consumption of cow's milk, of whole milk. And I believe there's something to this. The theory certainly is that there's a similarity between the proteins.
Dr. Atwood, when we come back, I'd kind of like to start from the beginning of raising a child. As a pediatrician, you deal with kids from birth to 16, 18 years of age. So let's just do it in chronological order. Let's start when we come back, talk about how you feed a kid from birth and take it on through the teenage years.
Sure.
If you'd like to talk to my guest, Dr. Atwood, the number to call is 707-270-1350. We don't have to tell him 707. 270-1350. 270-1350. I'm Dr. John McDougall. This is KSRO Radio 1350. Their line's open for you right now.
The Shelton family and the staff at Food for Thought Market in Delhi are pleased to welcome
Sonoma County's top medical professionals. Discuss all aspects of the world of medicine every Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. on Sonoma County's Health Beat, right here on 1350 KSRO, where Sonoma County comes first.
And good morning, this is Dr. John McDougall, KSRO Radio 1350. Dr. Charles Atwood, pediatrician, author of Dr. Atwood's Low-Fat Prescription for Kids, and boy, do we need this book, is my guest. He's from Louisiana, and he's an active practicing pediatrician who deals with these problems every day with kids and their diets and their parents and so on. We have Barbara on the line, who we'll get to in just a minute, and there are two lines open for you at 270-1350. But how do we start out the kids, Dr. Atwood, in life? Bottle or breast?
Well, certainly in the beginning, breast by a long shot. We shouldn't discourage breastfeeding, and I'm afraid in many cases, the grandparents or the relatives or the husband or someone is discouraging breastfeeding. We're seeing a little more breastfeeding now than we did when I was in medical school, I believe, though. So the trend is good. I think children should continue breastfeeding as long as possible. 6 months, a year and a half, if the parent can possibly do it. Because what I'm trying to do is avoid that need for any infant formula to be given at the end of breastfeeding. I would like to have the child breastfeed right up until the time they can eat a fairly normal adult-type diet of soft food.
And so what kinds of things, say we take them up, we breastfeed exclusively, and I'm just going to put my feelings in here, breastfeed exclusively to 6 months, start them on solid foods at 6 months. What kind of solid foods are we going to start them on at 6 months?
Well, I know most people actually go to the store and buy these prepared baby foods. The commercial baby foods, to me, are not quite what I like. I like to have the parent make their own baby foods by using the exact same foods that the family eats. Just put it in a blender and make their own. I like to start a child on a variety of possibly yellow vegetables first, then move on to green vegetables, and meat could be introduced last if we give meat at all. I'm perfectly happy if a parent doesn't give me any meat.
Okay, that's the point I want to make. If the parent says, look, no meat, no poultry, no fish, no cheese, no yogurt, no skim milk, you're going to say okay.
I can live with that.
Do you think your patient could live with that, too? That's the important thing. I know you can live with
it. I really do. I don't feel that we need to make a special effort to reduce fat before the age of two. So let's just start at age two.
Okay.
And at age two, I see no difference in the low-fat diet that we read about in the McDougall program and what I recommend for my own patients, my children. I think it should be the same low-fat diet. I don't feel, though, that we should make a special effort to encourage parents to reduce dietary fat before age two.
So
it's a period of very rapid growth, and we think brain growth, too. So,
well, they're going to be on a high-fat diet called breast milk.
That is a high-fat, it's a higher-fat diet, right?
It's 50, but we know 50, 60% breast milk, fat.
We know breast milk in the first 2 years of life is absolutely the best nutrient a child can have. I mean, for many, many reasons. It avoids allergies. It gives some antibodies. It prevents, hopefully, maybe even, it might even prevent type 1 diabetes. But for many, many reasons, we know children do much better on breast milk.
Okay, now the big question, because my listeners know this is how they should feed their kids. The big question, Dr. Charles Atwood, and if you can give me the answer, I'd greatly appreciate it, is how do you get the kids to eat this way and the parents to comply and put the effort into it so the kids do eat well?
It's really, it's a great question, and it's one that everyone asks me. First of all, the parent, it all begins in the shopping at the supermarket. Parents should spend maybe 80% of their time right there in the produce section, much less time at the meat counter, much less time at the dairy counter. The parents should not take home high-fat foods and high-fat snacks. Now, how do you get a child to actually eat vegetables, fruits, grains, and legumes? You do that by teaching that child from the very beginning, you know, to like that food, because a child is not born with a fat taste. It's something that's learned. We know a Hindu child would never pick a hamburger or an ice cream cone. But if we avoid teaching them the fat taste by offering certain foods as enticements, for instance, you can have your ice cream if you will eat your spinach. You know, we need to avoid this type of thing. Children will actually choose a plant-based diet. We're doing something in the school lunch program in a new pilot program that I'm working with up in Cornell where kindergartners are taught the health benefits of a plant-based diet and then offered that very same day that food in the school lunch program, and they actually choose that food over meat and fried foods and french fries, etc.
I think a lot of effort has to go into perverting a child's taste buds. I remember as a kid I had a very difficult time learning to like cow's milk, and I remember telling my mother, I can't chew this. And she'd say, Johnny, you have to eat this beef to get enough protein. And I say, no, I can't chew it. And what mother should have said is, Johnny, of course you can't chew it. You have the wrong kind of teeth. Throw it over to the cat. The cat can do it. But she didn't do that.
You know, one of the real important chapters in my book is, isn't meat needed for iron and protein? And we know in this country we get far too much protein from animal sources.
All right,
and
well,
we can get plenty from vegetable sources.
Let me invite the listeners again to call and to ask your pediatric questions. The number to call is 270-1350. We have Barbara on the line, and we have a couple lines open for you at 270-1350. My guest, Dr. Charles Atwood. It's Dr. Charles Atwood's low-fat prescription for kids, and you can find it in the bookstores. I'm Dr. John McDougall. This is KSR Radio 1350. Back with you in just a moment.
Hi, my name is Hope, and I work at Community Market Natural Foods. Our mission is to sell natural products that are not harmful to the environment. We want to support what we believe in, our home, the earth. Community Market provides a wide variety of natural foods at affordable prices. We also carry many McDougall-approved products and specialty diet items such as oil-free, wheat-free.
Yes.
1-800-587-EGIA. I dialed the numbers. EGIA, they said, and I knew they meant the Electric and Gas Industries Association.
You're listening to the Dr. John McDougall Show on 1350 KSRO. Brought to you by Food for Thought Natural Food Store and Deli. Check out their new location in the Mayette Shopping Center on Yalupa Avenue or their original location in Sebastopol. Food for Thought.
And when it comes to changing your own diet, you think of not much about it. It doesn't matter to you, does it? You could eat grapefruit. You could eat little cans of ground-up cowhide and these liquid protein diets. Heck, you're tough. You're an adult. When it comes to your kids, you get real concerned and real emotional about it. Unborn kids also, when you're pregnant, you think about it. So here we have a man who flies in the face of standard dietary advice, tells us that the kids shouldn't be eating the meat or the dairy, tells people you should be feeding your kids a plant-based diet, a practicing pediatrician, Dr. Charles Atwood. The name of the book is Dr. Atwood's Low-Fat Prescription for Kids. If you'd like to talk to Dr. Atwood, 270-1350, and Barbara, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello, Dr. Atwood.
Hello, Barbara.
I would like to know, this may be a very basic question, but if I'd like to know how much the fat and vitamin and fiber content of a nursing mother's milk is transferred to her baby.
Well, I think the baby who's under 2 years of age is certainly going to get most of the fat in the milk. Now, there's no fiber in mother's milk to speak of, so we can't count on that for fiber.
But they have great bowel movements. So breastfed babies have these wonderful bowel movements, as I remember. So obviously nature planned it right, even though it's a fiber-free food.
Right. Right. At that age, the other rules just don't apply because they certainly have very soft, loose bowel movements on breast milk. Vitamins, I do think they're okay, but in breast milk, there's not a plentiful amount of vitamin C and A. However, we're in a stage of life where it's not quite that important yet. I don't think there's any question that breast milk is the most desirable nutrient for a baby under the age of two, though. And when I say under the age of two, I realize that most people don't breastfeed that long.
Sure.
But they certainly could.
Now, Barbara, could the question be stated, is breast milk ideal and does it supply everything a child needs for the first six months of life?
Well, actually, what I was wondering is if a woman, say, is eating a terribly high-fat diet, is her baby getting more fat?
Yeah, I understand now. If there are certain things that I think a nursing mother should not eat, if she does not want her baby exposed to cow's milk protein, she shouldn't be drinking cow's milk herself when she when she's nursing. There is some transfer of the animal protein, and I believe that this is what you're asking: how much of that is going to get to the baby?
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage my mothers in my practice not to drink. Eat dairy products or drink milk if they're nursing their baby, if they really want this baby to not have any exposure to the antigens of cow's milk.
Well, that'll do it. Thank you very much.
And if you believe, like I do, Barbara, that childhood diabetes is an immunologic reaction to cow's milk protein, you'll want to keep your breast milk clean.
Alrighty, yeah. Thanks.
Very good.
Thanks a lot for calling. Lines are open for you at 270-1350, 270-1350. What kind of response do you get at the pediatric meetings, Dr. Atwood, when you talk about this kind of eating for kids? Are there pediatricians coming along, or are they...
Well, you know, John, they're really coming along. When I first started writing the book, it was thought of as a more radical book than it is now. However, we're just getting wonderful feedback from most of the pediatricians around the country. I've done a lot of talking in the last year and a half, and, of course, we expected good things from certain people. Dr. Frank Oski, of course, up in Hopkins, said he couldn't put my book down. He felt that it was a wonderful book. But we're getting similar responses from most pediatricians. There is an official discrepancy here. The American Academy of Pediatrics has an official guideline that's a little different than they feel I'm a little too strict with animal products.
Of course.
But we think they're coming around, too.
I would expect so, but like other health organizations and individual doctors, they're all heading in this direction.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How about, I don't see it mentioned in your book, but it's always a topic that comes up, and I'd certainly like to have your opinion on it. Immunizations?
How I feel about immunizations?
Yes.
In general. Well, I'm all for immunizations. I was very excited when the new hepatitis B immunization became available, because this was one of the real killers later in life, liver disease. But I'm a strong advocate of all routine immunizations. Even the new chickenpox vaccine, I think, is very important.
You think that's going to be helpful? Does the pertussis vaccine trouble you when you give it to kids?
I realize it does a lot of people, but it doesn't. I've been practicing pediatrics for nearly 35 years, and I must give 20 or 30 a day, and I have never seen anything that I could attribute any detrimental effect. I realize it's been reported, but I think it's like being hit by a falling star. I think it's one in a million.
And how rewarding is a pediatric practice where you get the children to change their diet? I mean, do you have the same kind of good feelings and good feedback that I get as an internist when you get the patients to change their diet?
I think it's a wonderful feeling. I've been at it long enough now to where I've seen a couple of generations reach adulthood, and I've been approached by parents who used to be my kids in my practice, and they tell me that what I taught them about low-fat diets and high-fiber diets when they were 5 and 6 and 7 years old stuck with them for a lifetime. And, you know, we know this. We know that whatever a child's eating patterns are at about age 8, that's going to be their eating patterns for the rest of their life. And it's wonderful to see these high cholesterol levels come down, because 40 million American children have abnormally high cholesterol levels. We're just not checking for it.
And they have high blood pressure.
Right.
And they're fat.
We find all the problems we find as adults, we're now finding in the preschool years, actually.
Well, I'll tell you, you're doing wonderful work. I have not seen a better book on kids and good eating than the book that you have, Dr. Atwood.
I really appreciate that, John.
Dr. Charles Atwood is the author. It's Dr. Atwood's Low-Fat Prescription for Kids. I want to thank you very much for being with me.
Thank you very much.
It's a great book, and you're a pioneer, to say the least. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm Dr. John McDougall. This is KSR Radio 1350. Lines are open for you if you'd like to call in. I'd be happy to talk to you about any old subject. The number is 270-1350. That's 270-1350. Back with you in a moment.
Yeah, you'll find Ed down there at Zumwalt Magrini, probably running around yelling, "What are you doing now, Magrini?" He's easy to spot. When you do, tell him your favorite radio station, KSRO, wishes him a good day. You're listening to the Dr. John McDougall Show on 1350 KSRO. Brought to you by Food for Thought Natural Food Store and Deli. Visit their new location on Yalupa in the Mayette Shopping Center or their original store in Sebastopol. Food for Thought.
Good morning, Dr. John McDougall, KSR Radio 1350. Two lines open for you at 270-1350. Abe, welcome to the show.
Hi, I have a question about the diet supplements. I'm basically a vegetarian diet, and I don't eat any dairy products. And I was wondering if things like protein or so, that I should use some kind of supplements.
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
You cannot design, Abe, you cannot design a protein-deficient diet based on starches and vegetables. It has far in excess the protein you'd need. The diet that I recommend, which is based on rice, corn, potatoes, and so on, is around, let's say, a man guessing your size and calorie intake of, say, 2,500, 3,000 calories a day. It's about 80, 90, 110 grams of protein a day. In experimental studies that were done back in the late 1940s and early 1950s, what they established was a man our size burning 3,000 calories a day needs 20 grams of protein. And the World Health Organization says that we need 38 grams of protein. And in a basic plant-based diet, you'd get, and that's not even with beans, peas, and lentils. That's just corn, rice, potatoes, a few vegetables. You'd get around 80 to 110 grams of protein. You add beans, peas, and lentils to the situation, and you can raise it up to 190 grams of protein. So you need to add no protein supplements. And I have to tell you, Abe, in some experiments, most of the experiments that have been done have used animal proteins, and these have been experiments that have been concerned a mineral balance. In other words, what happens to calcium and other minerals when you change the protein intake? And when you use animal protein, it's very, very easy to get into a negative mineral balance where you're losing more calcium, for example, in the urine than you're absorbing from the gut. But in two studies done, they used concentrated soy protein, and the other one used concentrated wheat gluten, which is wheat protein. And in those two studies, they were also able to put the people in negative calcium balance. But that's a very artificial situation, whereas eating a lot of meat, it's not an artificial situation, it's the American way. So you have to add no extra minerals, then that includes calcium. You have to add no extra vitamins except for one. Let me explain to you, there are 13 known vitamins, Abe.
Yeah.
Of those 13 vitamins, 11 of them are made by plants, you know, like vitamin A, vitamin C, vitamin E, your B vitamins, they're all made by plants. The only two vitamins that aren't made by plants, the original source is plants. Now, the only two are vitamin D, which, if you recall from your high school biology, is not a vitamin. It's actually a hormone. It's a hormone because it's synthesized in the body. It's just a misnomer to call it a vitamin because it can be supplied as a vitamin, but your vitamin D levels depend upon your sun exposure during the year. So that takes care of vitamin number 12. Vitamin number 13 is B12, which is the only vitamin you'll add to your diet if you are strictly vegetarian for more than 3 years. Or if you happen to be a woman and you were pregnant and or nursing, you would add a supplement of B12 to your diet. And that's the only one you'd add.
And that's like every three years, you said? Or?
No, if you were pure vegetarian for more than three years. Right. No, actually, it's 20 to 30 years, but I use the most conservative recommendation. It would take you 20 to 30 years to run out of B12. But I try and cover everybody's arguments, because why bother even make it a controversial issue? So I just say, after 3 years of being on a strict vegetarian diet, and that means strict, no fish, no dairy, then you add a non-animal source of B12, or if you're pregnant or nursing at any time, you add a non-animal source of B12, and that covers everybody's argument.
Okay.
Isn't that simple?
Thank you very much.
Have you enjoyed good health because of your diet?
I enjoy the information. I enjoy the diet very well.
What happened to you when you got rid of the meat and the dairy in your diet?
Well, basically, I do a lot of exercise or so, and I lost a lot of weight, and I became quite trim, and I have low body fat and a lot of energy. I do a great deal of bike riding.
What do your friends say when they find out you eat weird?
Well, I fell into it. I didn't really consciously go on the diet. I just sort of cut out food over a period of time, and then I just disliked the food. It just didn't agree with me, and I just stopped. And now I, completely off meat products and dairy products, and that was over about a year period. And I don't really feel like I've missed anything in my diet.
Then you're not a social outcast.
Yeah, no, right.
Especially not in this community. It's great to live in the North Bay area because so many people eat a healthy diet and are trying to eat a healthy diet and realize how important it is to eat a healthy diet.
Yeah, there are a number of restaurants that have, McDougal items on the menus.
Isn't that great?
Yeah, that is good.
Have you tried the Palm Room at the Flamingo Hotel?
No, I have not.
Phenomenal. I had dinner there about 3 weeks ago before I went on my vacation. Now, of course, I wanted to talk about it right afterwards, but I had to go on vacation. And they have absolutely phenomenal menu. In fact, I have it right here. They have a vegetarian burger. They have a vegetarian plate. They have steamed vegetable platter with Lumberg rice. They have tofu egg salad sandwich, black bean chili and Lumberg brown rice, vegetarian ravioli with garden fresh marinara. They also have a little higher fat thing, organic peanut butter and bananas, but hey, the kids would go wild over that.
Yeah.
They have a bohemian veggie sandwich, which is made of sliced avocado, alfalfa sprouts, lettuce, tomatoes, tofu mayo, oil-free whole wheat bun, and they serve bagel chips on the side.
You'll have to try it.
Yeah, it's a new place in town, and I always like to support new places in town. We have 87 restaurants that serve McDougal food. That's the Palm Room
the
Flamingo
Hotel.
Yeah,
Flamingo
fancy
Hotel.
Place, too.
Okay.
And you can take all your meat-eating friends there and order, and they won't even know you're doing something different.
Right.
Because they have other types of great food there, too, that you and I wouldn't enjoy.
Okay, thank you very much.
Abe, thanks for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye. I'm Dr. John McDougal. This is KSR Radio 1350. There are lines open for you at 270-1-350. That's 270. Let me give it to you that slowly now. That's 270-1-350. You got it. Give me a call. Bye.
This is a test of your emergency cash system.
Your vacation.
Good morning, Dr. John McDougal. This is KSR Radio 1350. Michelle in Napa, welcome to the show.
I enjoy listening to your show,
Thank you.
I have my family pretty much on your diet, although we do have roast chicken about once a week.
Hey, you know something? The body's tough.
But anyway, I have a question. I've also been reading about some of the essential fatty acids.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if you would recommend a source of gamma-linolenic acid, like borage oil, or...
Why would you want to take it?
Well, because I've read that certain essential fatty acids are necessary for prostaglandin E1 and E3.
Yes, they are.
And do we get those in our diet
if we're
not eating any oils?
Absolutely you do, because, you see, essential fats are made by plants. And as a consequence, a plant-based diet is full of essential fats. There's never been a case of essential fatty acid deficiency ever to occur on a natural diet.
Except that I thought that most of the plant food essential fats were of the omega-6 unless you eat flax.
Well, it depends. Yeah, there's omega-6 and omega-3. All of them have both.
But they do.
Yes.
So you don't have...
Some are more concentrated than others in one of either the omega-6 or the omega-3s. For example, purslane, soy products, almonds, very, very high concentrations of omega-3.
Almonds?
Mm-hmm. But the question is do you need to add any extra This is the question that should be on your mind. Do you need to add any extra omega-6 or omega-3 fatty acids to your diet? Omega-3 is the big one, right?
Mm-hmm.
The question is, do you need to add any extra omega-3s? You've got plenty of them in the food. There's no such thing as omega-3 fatty acid deficiency, except when one time, about 20 years ago, doctors were concerned that little babies were too fat because they switched them over to whole milk and the kids got fat. So they fed them skim milk. And as a consequence, they develop fatty acid deficiency. That's the only situation I've ever heard of where any human being has ever developed essential fatty acid deficiency, where they were getting adequate amounts of any kinds of foods.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a plentiful supply. Now, the thing that you've been taught by an industry that's very interested in selling you concentrated sources of oil is that you need to add these extra oils to your diet as a daily supplement, and that's not true. And the consequence of doing that is you're going to become fatter. That oil deregulates diabetes and makes blood sugar go higher, so if somebody has a tendency towards diabetes, it'll exaggerate the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Those omega-3 fats are immunosuppressant, and as a matter of fact, that's one reason you might want to take them. Say you had rheumatoid arthritis, or you had an inflammatory breast disease. Then some of these omega-3 fats have a therapeutic effect and will decrease the inflammation of the arthritis or the inflammatory breast disease. And so it may be valuable to you there. But then you're not using it as a daily tonic. You're using it as a drug to get an effect. And for that reason, it may be something you want to look into. But as far as a daily tonic, I know you don't need it.
Okay.
And I know that you're going to experience some adverse effects depending upon how much you take. The more you take, the more likely you're to have a problem with weight, a problem with oil on your skin, a problem with deregulating diabetes. There's also the concern that these omega-3 fats become rancid and provide an oxidation reaction, and as a result may increase the problems of atherosclerosis. Some of the omega-3 fats, for example, your fish oil fats, your omega-3 fats, your eicosapentaenoic acids,
mm-hmm.
These have all been shown, in all the studies done, and I just reviewed them, so I couldn't find any study that contradicted this, and I found 11 studies that showed that these omega-3 fats raised your bad cholesterol.
Oh, really?
Yes, they do. And unless you take very, very large doses, but in the doses commonly taken, they raise your bad cholesterol. No, I think you need to look at it in terms of these things have pharmacologic properties. Just like, these oils are not natural. They're not normal. They're not present in nature naturally. They're refined from a plant and put in a bottle or a pill and sold to you, just like any other pharmacologic agent would be sold to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so you need to look at them from that point of view.
Okay.
And so if you're in need of immunosuppression, of suppressing your immune system, then you might want to take them. And I have recommended them to people in the past for those particular reasons. But as far as a daily tonic, no.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
And I would tell you, you know, that I have in the past taken the same attitude with vitamins and mineral supplements. And I still have the same general feeling about vitamin and mineral supplements, except that I'm being swayed slightly by the literature that's coming out now that says taking vitamin E, vitamin A, and form of beta carotene and vitamin C may add some extra protection with very little cost as far as side effects and money. They may add a little extra protection when it comes to things like heart disease, cancer, degeneration of the macula of the eye. And so, but then I come into the question, Michelle, is this only in people who have a horrible diet that which is what most Americans have and all the people that have been studied with these particular supplements? And would it help somebody like you and I who already have a high level of vitamin A, C, and E in our diet because we eat a healthy diet?
Mm-hmm.
Or, and even possibly, would that extra vitamin A, C, and E cause vitamin and mineral imbalances that may even be detrimental to you and I? Who eat a healthier diet?
Yeah, I've wondered about the supplements too, and sometimes I take them, sometimes I don't, and I've now pretty much just if I feel a cold coming on or something like that, I'll.
Well, I've got on my little shelf in my kitchen, I've got vitamin E, vitamin C, and beta carotene, and there are times when I end up taking them, and there are most of the times I end up forgetting them. I don't know the right answer on those particular things, but I know that the benefits are going to be minimal. The risks and costs are minimal. If you err in one direction or the other, I don't think it's serious, but if you err in the direction of thinking that vitamins and mineral supplements are going to compensate for cigarette smoking, for eating a high-fat diet, then you're wrong. Then you're making a very serious error in judgment.
Yeah, I mean, I do pretty much think that God surely must have put the right kind of vitamins in our food. It's just a question of, is that food available to us today in the supermarket?
I believe it is.
Okay. But, and then you were recommending the B12. What form do you recommend?
Just find a natural source in the health food store, one that's kind of a healthy-looking preparation.
Oh.
I don't have any specific one I'd recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling, Michelle.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye. I'm Dr. John McDougall. We'll be back with Gene in just a moment.
The Shelton family and the staff at Food for Thought Market in Delhi are pleased to welcome you to our newly expanded shop in downtown
Savannah.
You're listening to the Dr. John McDougall Show on 1350 KSRO. Brought to you by Food for Thought Natural Food Store and Deli. Check out their new location in the Mayette Shopping Center on Yalupa Avenue or their original location in Sebastopol. Food for Thought.
Dr. John McDougall, KSRO Radio 1350. Gene from Grattan, welcome to the show. Great.
I am.
Great, thank you.
Well, whatever. Actually,
never been there.
Well, it's getting awfully toony. You better go take a look.
All right.
No, I have, I don't know how sudden this is. I suddenly discovered it. Suddenly come up with high blood pressure, and I've never had it.
How old are you?
I'm 80.
Big deal.
Yeah.
Well, so what do they want to do, put you on blood pressure pills?
No, I haven't talked to the doctor about that yet. No, I have emphysema, so I'm using the Proventil and Benzeryl inhalant.
Well, the Proventil will raise your blood pressure.
Well, you see, the thing is, he took me off it because, except for once a day, because I got so dizzy, I had to call my neighbor. Fortunately, I have a neighbor who keeps an eye on me because I didn't quite know which way to go.
Okay.
However,
well,
that wears off within 6 hours, which it did. So I have been taking that, using that only once a day, and then the Benzeryl, which is the other one, I've used off more often.
Let's try some other things for the asthma. Have you tried raising the head of your bed?
Oh, yes. I sleep at a 45-degree angle.
Okay. So you're kind of bent, then.
I beg your pardon?
You're bent. You're bent in the middle.
Well, not exactly.
Okay. Well, the point is that at least you've tried to compensate for any reflux that
yes.
might cause asthma.
Yes.
And do you have acid indigestion?
No.
Okay.
I have not adhered strictly to the diet in that I do eat margarine.
How about dairy products?
No.
Well, that's good.
So but I do drink coffee, and I also drink wine.
Well, coffee will cause acid indigestion, and also coffee will raise your blood pressure.
Oh, well, of course. See, nothing has changed. That's the thing that's interesting. I haven't done anything that I haven't been doing for years.
Well, how high is your blood pressure?
Well, first, the time I found it was on the 26th, it was 170 over 103.
No, that's kind of high, but still, at your age, you know, I certainly wouldn't rush to put you on blood pressure medication.
Well, I don't intend to, but I'm looking at your elimination diet here. One of those would be a good idea just to eliminate all these other things for a while and see what goes on.
Why don't you try it for a week and see if you feel better?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because I don't enjoy being dizzy. I don't need that.
Right. And if you can make the asthma better, then maybe you won't need to have the Proventil.
Yeah.
And maybe then your blood pressure won't go up as much.
Well, I was surprised that it did because, as I say, I've been doing nothing I haven't done for years.
Well, that level of blood pressure, I certainly would not treat if you were my patient. And
okay.
and I wouldn't worry about it if I were you either.
Well, I'm not. I have four. It was 170, 103 on the 26th of July.
Right.
139 over 94. On the 1st of this month.
That's what I suspected. It was just
and then 159 over 104 on the 4th, and today it was 157 over 98.
Right. Well, try the elimination diet. See how you do. Drink extra fluids. I know you're not going to give up your coffee and your wine, and I'm not going to beat up on you about it.
Well,
so just,
I can cut the coffee down to one. I only drink
you know,
two cups
Gene,
of coffee a day.
I wouldn't. I'm just teasing you. I wouldn't even bother with it. I can even make the argument that the coffee makes your asthma better.
Well, I guess at this time of my life, I keep telling myself I ought to enjoy a few things.
Well, plus, let's try and get you feeling better and see if a little bit more change in diet will help, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Why don't you give us a call back?
I'll do that. Thanks so much.
And Sharon from Cotati. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Well, I have a condition that's it's Candida.
Candida.
Yeah, the thrush version of it.
Do you have it in the vaginal area?
Not too much. It's been mostly in my sinuses and throat, primarily.
You have candida in your sinuses and the doctors can culture it out?
They've been able to see it, and I've been on an antifungal
diet
medication and the full diet and all of that.
See, because that's real unusual for somebody to have candida in their sinuses. I mean, unless you have cancer and you're on chemotherapy or you're some other ways immunosuppressed, that's not a common thing that I'm aware of to have candida.
Mm-hmm.
It is. Vaginal candidiasis, of course, is common.
Yeah. Well, it has been throughout my whole body. I mean, once I got it, it's pretty much...
Well, what can I answer for you?
Well, I just overheard you were listing some restaurants, and I'm just wondering if any of those do cater to this kind of a diet.
Not to a candida diet.
Mm-hmm.
No.
It's pretty hard to find.
Well, you know, and I'm just going to kind of dismiss the whole discussion we're having with the fact that I don't really believe in the candida concept of causing illness. And, you know, I've had Dr. Crook on the radio show, and
mm-hmm.
I think he's a very entertaining man. And fortunately, he recommends a diet just like I recommend these days.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I don't get too excited about it, one of the reasons is too many, I really haven't seen a lot of people, or any that I can remember, that went on the candida diet, took the nystatin, and said, hey, solved all my problems. but it doesn't mean that it doesn't happen sometimes.
Right.
But I do see an awful lot of people who follow my philosophy who come to that conclusion, that
right.
they've solved the problems. So maybe if you're not getting the results that you want, maybe you ought to think differently.
Right.
And try the things that I suggest.
Mm-hmm. And also, I was going to ask, there was you had mentioned, I think Dr. John Lee was a guest on the show once.
Yes, he's a guest host.
And I was wondering what the title of that book was that he has.
I don't know, but you can call my office and they'll tell you. It's about progesterone cream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye. I'm Dr. John McDougall. And this is KSR Radio 1350. Probably one of the highlight days we had last year is when we went to a Grateful Dead concert. Took my daughter, four of her friends. Started out way up on the top, looking down. Couldn't even see the band players. Ended up having dinner prepared by the chefs for the Grateful Dead. And ended up at the end of the conference, sitting on stage, about a foot and a half from Jerry Garcia's elbow. What an experience. Well, great loss in the music world. Certainly glad I had some chance to get to know him and other members of the band. And I'm Dr. John McDougall. This is KSRO Radio 1350. Sure hope you have a great day today. We have a great guest tomorrow. We're going to talk about one of the community hospitals and see what the hospitals in this town plan on doing to make Santa Rosa a healthier place. Look forward to joining you tomorrow.
Sunny here in Santa Rosa. Coming up on KSRO, we'll have local reaction from the Sonoma County.